The state of Oregon and local communities share some responsibility for the supervision in and out of cells of people convicted of crimes in the state. So there's some sharing of money, too, and local officials around Oregon have a bone to pick with the state. The two-year budget period that started July 1st provides money to the Department of Corrections in the hundreds of millions of dollars, but not in the final amount local public safety people say they need. The Oregon State Sheriff's Association calls the Department of Corrections budget a devastating shortfall and urges immediate action from the legislature. Let's get a perspective from Jackson County, Oregon's sixth largest by population. Two people from county join us here. Nathan Sickler is the Jackson County Sheriff sitting at the table with me. Sheriff, good to have you back in the room.
Thanks for having me.
And Eric Geyer is the Jackson County Community Justice Director here as well. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you.
So give us the portions of the incarceration and supervision pie that each of you are responsible for. We'll start with you, Sheriff.
Well, we run the jail. So the sheriff's responsible for jail operations. And so generally speaking, we don't have much to do with offenders once they have gone through the system and have been, you know, their cases have been adjudicated either by conviction or whatever else. So we generally hold people pretrial. Every once in a while, we'll hold sentenced inmates, and then we also house individuals for community justice who are on supervision who have maybe violated terms of their parole or probation. But once they're convicted, then they move into the supervisory authority of community justice, which is Eric's department.
All right. So you're the one who's really looking for the corrections, the money to make sure that your budget is what it needs to be.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note that the funding really does cover a lot of different pieces regarding justice-involved individuals in Jackson County. We're definitely working with people after they have been convicted. So our justice-involved individuals, for our sake of conversation today, are the people who are on supervision in Jackson County. And that number is creeping up over 2,300, knocking on the door of 2,400 in our community. So it's important to note that there is a large segment of our population that in Jackson County are under our supervision. We do have a lot of crossover with Sheriff Sickler's operation at the jail. 60 of the beds there are dedicated to what we call our supervisory authority population. So these are people on supervision who have been sentenced to less than a year, and they're under the direction of our department. So we have the ability and the responsibility to move them within the community as we see fit there, as is necessary for their sentence to be served. We also have the Transition Center in Talent, which receives money from the state that offers an alternative to jail for people that are sentenced to the local supervisory authority, amongst other things. We also have the ability to provide supports from this money. So monies for treatment, monies for assisting our clients as they transition into the community. There's a lot of things that get paid for by this money, but it is serving that general population that I mentioned at the beginning.
Is this the only source of income for your agency then?
No, our county is one of the has a local match. So Jackson County invests in the in homeless services for clients that are justice involved. So about $1.5 million of general fund goes to fund out at the Transition Center for our unhoused justice-involved individuals in Jackson County. And it speaks to the state as a whole. There are a number of counties that provide that local match. $66 million in total throughout the state are infused from local communities to assist in this work. We also have other grants through the state that provide funding and support and resources for our clients.
A couple of numbers I want to go back over with you. You mentioned 2,300, getting close to 2,400 now. Is that, I mean, you had a larger number than has been present in Jackson County before under supervision?
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that at the beginning of the 2017 biennium, we had about 1,850, so 1,850 people on supervision, and we've seen growth over the last just 2 years. I think we are one of the largest growers in the state in terms of our overall percentage of folks served.
And the 60 beds you mentioned dedicated to your supervision at the Jackson County Jail, so these are beds that are reserved for people who have violated parole and probation?
Yeah, and I think that's a really important piece. I think reserved is a large word. We work in partnership with the jail. Mm-hmm. So there's times we go over that 60 and then we work hard to get it back down. There's times where we're under that 60 and we don't go looking to fill it up, but it's a fluid number that we really aim for 60 on. And they also could be people that are sentenced locally to less than a year that we are working to help find a way to have them serve their sentence here.
So what has been the trend in funding until this last legislative session? What has been the general arc of where the money in the corrections budget dedicated to community corrections has gone?
Well, I think I'll let Eric answer that, but it was the what's the study that was done by the Department of Corrections, the mm-hmm. time assessment study, or what the time needed to supervise individuals daily. It was what, about $11.69, and the new study showed about the need is about $14.24 per client, so $14.24 per day. So quite an increase from the last time this study was done.
And speaking to that arc, I think that's really an important piece to look at. You know, when you look at community corrections in the state of Oregon, ever since this was delegated to the counties in a contractual obligation, the state's side of the bargain is that they need to maintain what we call current service level, mm-hmm. which is the amount of money that it's required to give to the counties on a per client basis to serve that population in the community. And if they don't meet that current service level, there are provisions in statute that allow counties to turn that service provision back to the state. Two counties did that historically when it did fall down, Douglas and Lynn, and they call that the opt-out. So the state has an obligation to meet that baseline funding. And when they are determining what that baseline is, what that current service level is, they do what they call a time study every 6 years. They go and say, hey, has the work we're providing and the nature of this work changed substantially that would require a different rate? And that rate is then used to determine how much money current service level will be. So over the last decade, there's been a tremendous change in the way the work with justice-involved individuals in our community has gone. And we've gone from more of a compliance-based, where it was just name, address, are you meeting these pieces? We'll take some of your analysis and we'll monitor that, to more collaborative case planning, more of a behavioral health model. And that behavioral health model, as you can imagine, takes more time. And the time is what has created that cost increase.
So is there a basic disagreement here between the counties and the state about how much time it takes or how much each hour of time is worth?
I will speak to generally on the counties. The Department of Corrections actually did the time study, mm-hmm. and they came in and they're the ones who said, yeah, it costs $14.24 per day mm-hmm. to supervise a person in the community. When you factor in the cost of jail beds, the cost of treatment, the cost of that probation officer, all of these things at the increased rate got it to a number of $14.24. There's no discrepancy over that in the sense that it was a nationally recognized study. They presented at the National Association of Parole and Probation, and it was really kind of a well-respected study that was done in line with the Department of Administrative Services. All the good folks upstate that need to do good governance really helped create this time study. There was disagreements between some folks over whether or not the state had an obligation to fund the time study. They currently do not in statute, and so I know that there's some counties throughout the state that were a little bit frustrated by that, to say the least.
We're talking about community corrections money here in the state of Oregon on the Jefferson Exchange with Eric Geyer, Jackson County Community Justice Director, Nathan Sickler, Jackson County Sheriff. The Sheriff's Association recently called upon the state legislature to put more money into community corrections in the state of Oregon. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Before I bury us in numbers, let me ask for one little detail. You mentioned, Eric Geyer, that Douglas and Lynn counties opted out. So they essentially said to the state, we can't do this for what you're paying us. You do it?
That's correct. The opening was due to the fact that the state did not fund it at the full current service level, and they decided to turn that service back to the state. So those two counties are operated by the State Department of Corrections.
So let's talk about the practical effect this has on the ground then, Sheriff Sickler. I mean, are there things that you can't do because the budget has changed a bit in ways you didn't anticipate?
You know, I would say locally it won't impact us that way, but there are things that we could enhance if we were to see that increased funding. You know, right now our jail really limits a lot of our ability to bolster some of these other programs. The lack of jail space is a significant problem in Jackson County. So while we could increase, areas where we might do treatment-based supervision, increase our medication-assisted treatment programs or other things of those natures if we had additional funding, but it didn't impact us in the way that it impacted some of the other counties up north.
I noticed Multnomah County came out big and said, look, this is really causing some problems for us. But as you pointed out, too, I think in a release late in August that it's an issue, but this is an issue that you're dealing with all the time.
Yeah, the sheriff, Mike Reese, up in Multnomah County was going to face some closure or potential closure of jail beds, and that's going to push their jail population up into, I think he said, somewhere around 95%, and basically require forced releases or emergency releases from his jail. And I think last year, and I'm speaking 2018, they released, I want to say, 186 people roughly. They reported forced releases out of their jail, and we were about 5,300. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we experience that problem every day in Jackson County. And so, you know, when I we've been working pretty diligently on the jail for quite some time and how we're going to address those issues. We made some good improvements there, but ultimately we're going to need a updated and a larger facility if we're going to serve our community long term. And it was kind of just reiterating the fact that we're not just talking about Jackson County as having a local issue with lack of jail beds. It could affect other counties as well. And having another sheriff who's, you know, at the other end of the state saying this would be catastrophic for their criminal justice system, I thought was interesting.
Now, the Oregon State Sheriff's Association on September 12th, go ahead and turn that up because, yeah, it just went straight down on you. There you go. The microphone is, we're going to get the pliers in here later today and tighten up the microphone mounts. Okay, that's good. So the Sheriff's Association on September 12th cited a difference between baseline funding and an actual cost study, which already got its own acronym, ACS. And so is this the time study we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So the, where you guys are coming from then is to say, well, this is really what it costs to do this, and the state is saying, no, it costs by the lower figure. Is that what we're dealing with, Eric Geyer?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a unique way of determining costs, because these are costs that we've already been experiencing in the community. These aren't things that we say, hey, if you fund this, then we can do a different level of service. These are services that we do, and they're not services we do just on a whim. They're services that are based in research, but they're based in statute or in rule. So rule prescribes the way that we manage cases. Rule prescribes the interventions we do, and we're bound by that rule. And in order for us to be in compliance with the state in terms of the funding we receive for community corrections, we have to do these services. So the actual cost study, the emphasis really is on actual.
So I'll take a wild guess that Oregon State Sheriff's Association members and probably community corrections people as well testified at budget hearings and otherwise made their wishes known on the way to the budget being completed at the end of June.
Yeah, I wasn't present for those conversations, so I can't say what was said, but I do know that our Sheriff's Association did meet with the governor's office and relayed their concerns, and I know there was considerable work done by our community justice partners on the same topic.
So where is the state coming from? Because part of the rationale I've seen coming back from the state is that there are fewer people under supervision total. Is that fair?
Right. And I think that's something from a community corrections association that we celebrate. The fact that there are more Oregonians that are living without supervision and don't have that need in their life. We take that as something we've been partners in helping build, and it's something that should be celebrated by the state. But we still are looking at the rate. And it's not just the volume, but the rate was not where it needs to be to do the work that we're required to do. And that's the rate that Sheriff Sickler talked about earlier, where we were funded at $1,169 per client. And the cost study said we actually need to be funded at $1,424 to continue doing the work we do.
And so is the state sticking by $1,169 per client?
The state funded it at that level, and then we're having new discussions about on the state level.
Yeah, and some of those counties up north, like Marion, Clackamas, Washington, they actually are going to see reductions. And, you know, I won't speak directly for them, but the Clackamas County Sheriff Craig Roberts has done a tremendous work up there working with offenders and done some innovative things. And they may have to cut back on some of those programs like their transition center, which is a great resource for people who are coming out of, you know, the jail. And it helps them get lined out with alternatives and hooks them up with resources. And those things, I think, are a huge benefit. We started ours in a similar model in February. I think it was February mm-hmm. of this year. And we've had great success with our offender population. So it's almost as if you do a good job and, you know, they feel and they reduce the number of people on supervision that, you know, they're going to get their funding taken away, and they may need that funding to continue their efforts to reduce their offender population.
So does this get into that whole realm of budgeting where we think in terms of use it or lose it, and they didn't use it, and so they're losing it now?
No, I think they used it well. Mm-hmm. I just think that because their offender population went down, They were allocated based on the number of offenders.
So the state essentially did multiplication, you're saying. So they looked at the number of offenders times 1169 per client and said, okay, this is what you guys need. This is what we're putting in the budget.
That's the way the legislature ended up ending. That's where they ended up, absolutely.
Eric Geyer is Jackson County's Community Justice Director. Nathan Sickler is the Jackson County Sheriff. We're talking about the corrections budget from the state of Oregon and what it shares with local communities and the fact that the local communities are chafing a bit at the numbers that were delivered in this budget period, which runs 2 years starting July 1st behind us. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Questions, comments, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And I admit to turning into a total, you know, numbers and policy geek here, but to step back to a broader picture, Eric Geyer, are there things that you were doing that you can no longer do?
I think there are conversations we're going to need to have with the state about which pieces of that are in rule that are being required, that if we're going to fund at 1169, what that looks like. And so we'll work with our partners at DOC to determine what that looks like. Locally, we're able to still continue some of the things we do that we feel are innovative, that lead to long-lasting change. And that's, that speaks to the partnerships we have here locally. But there are certainly a host of things that we're looking to implement should we be funded at the actual cost rate of 1424.
So more things you could do, you're saying, if you had the 1424 per client.
Absolutely. Correct. More things around the way folks are transitioned out of a jail setting, the way folks are transitioned out of a prison setting to our community, the way we integrate with treatment services here locally. All of these things are really represented by that rate change.
Sheriff Sickler, you were chiming in there too. So,
I was just agreeing with Eric, especially with our lack of jail space. You know, we need to try to bolster all the programs around that as much as we can, and this funding would allow us to do those things and further alleviate some of our needs. We're still going to need a new facility. We're still going to need a larger, more modern jail. But whatever we can do to support that would be a benefit.
As long as we're on that subject, I need to talk to our one of our reporters, Eric Newman, last week about this very subject matter, the continued quest for a new jail in Jackson County. So is there some overlap here, it would seem? I mean, if you can keep money coming in from the state for certain programs, you can. Does that help the operational cost of the jail? Not the building of it, but the operation of it.
Yeah, it could. I mean, depending on how it looks with the funding and what our partnership ends up being with community justice, but there's a lot of good work that can be done between community justice and the jail. There's a lot of work being done now that is really positive. But how it looks for people coming in and out of jail and how that transition piece is, you know, we work with community justice right now to try to make that as smooth as possible. But really, you know, we're limited currently by resources and jail space in Jackson County.
And we receive the jail receives money through our Community Corrections Act plan for those beds that we utilize. So it does go to the operation, particularly for those folks who are either sentenced to less than a year or on supervision within our department.
Have you talked about, given the size jail that Sheriff Sickler's been talking about, what the bed allocation might be, if it's going to be different for community justice?
We've had discussions around that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think the piece for us that makes the biggest difference is that for community corrections to work, we really need to have that jail as a backdrop so that we can interrupt behavior, so that we can help engage and stabilize our clientele, and so that we can decrease the necessity of prison. When we have a strong jail and we have available jail beds, all of our programs are strengthened. So if a person is in a treatment program in the community and it's not going the way they want, or we're not getting the results we want, there can be that timeout if they need it, if there's a relapse and there's behavior that necessitates it. So the jail strengthens all of the programming we have. And in Jackson County, we have a lot of programming.
In justice philosophy, is this a somewhat harder case to make because it sounds like well beyond? You're talking about services that go beyond, you know, lock them up and hold them for X amount of time. You're talking about transitional services where you're helping people get back into society as opposed to just saying, there's the door, you're gone, go.
Right, and I think the sheriff's been a big partner in that. The idea that instead of, you know, releasing somebody at 3 a.m. without a home or a bed to go to, what if we waited until 8 a.m. and released them to a resource center? The idea that maybe somebody would benefit from from a medication-assisted treatment regimen inside of a jail setting. But really, from a community corrections, we've decreased the amount of time we use jail. We use it as a short-term intervention, look to really stabilize, and then reintegrate them into programming in our community.
Now, part of this push comes from the state itself, though, right? Because the state had to stop its, you know, because it had such a sharp upswing in prison population from the Measure 11 passage.
Right. And well, I think it would be disingenuous to say that this is completely human based on the state's level, although there is a huge concern for justice-involved individuals on the state level. Mm-hmm. But should they have to open another prison, the costs would be over in the hundreds of millions. And mm-hmm. so they have a definite incentive to support the communities in working with people here in the community.
And so the amount you're talking about then, the difference between the amount in the study and what the current service level is at the old number, what, $50 million? Is that the difference we're talking about?
Yeah,
here?
$25 million a year, 50 mm-hmm. over the biennium is what was ultimately not funded.
So I imagine there's been some discussions with legislators from Southern Oregon, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've talked with our local representatives, Pam Marsh, Jeff Golden, and Kim Wallen. Mm-hmm. These discussions were had early on mm-hmm. in the legislative session, and I believe they were supportive. Mm-hmm. I don't know what their impact up north was during this legislative session.
And do you see any possibility of the legislature, when they come back in February, making any adjustments to what was funded?
I do. I think there's a strong push within the legislature to fund these types of programs. There's a belief that this work and this partnership is important. I certainly don't want to speak on behalf of any of our elected officials, but I know there's going to be a lot of conversation around it and conversations that have already been happening. So.
Okay. Well, we've got a bit of an education here today, and I appreciate that from Jackson County Sheriff Nathan Sickler and Eric Geyer, the Community Justice Director. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll see if the legislature feels your way in February when they come back.
Well, we hope that they do. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.